Next case is 96-1695, State of Ohio ex rel. Thomas Olander versus Judith L. French, Melissa Schelling, and Donald Trigardis.
I represent Thomas J. Olander, who's seated at council table. And in this matter, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time.
There was a crisis today, a crisis of confidence in our government institutions. More than ever before, citizens see our government not as an institution which serves the public, but also as an alien body that mostly serves to accomplish the whims of those who have to hold government positions. We hear about common law courts, which involve people who are so alienated from our government, they've tried to create their own court system to protect them. Now, members of this court have vigorously and quite correct.
That's a bit of an overstatement about the common law court people, just for the record. That's not their main purpose, okay?
This case is numbered 96-1695. Has the underlying case brought here been dismissed?
Yes.
So all we're here is talking about not a crisis in government, whether or not you should have attorney's fees.
Yes.
And in effect, you have won.
Yes.
And your argument is that you have provided, if that is the law, and some of us think it is, and some of us think if you recognize from the cases that attorney's fees will be win, the statute says may have mandamus and attorney's fees. If the may modifies mandamus, not attorney's fees. All right. So you go on, however, and say that this is really egregious treatment that happened in this case, and that you provided a public benefit, and further, that there was almost clear malice in this case. Is that your argument?
Yes.
Okay, so those are your arguments to say you're entitled to attorney's fees.
Yes.
Well, actually, you don't have to go to the trial court abuse of discretion and deny it. The trial court abuse did deny the fees.
And I'm appealing that and saying that was...
What's the standard for review of that?
Abuse of discretion, and that's what I'm arguing in this case. And we have two reasons for submitting. This case involves really an interplay between two statutes, Revised Code Section 149.43 and 109.02. The combined effect of these two provisions is that state agencies cannot hide their in-house counsel with public records. It's our view that in attempting to maintain the disclosure of this records, there are two reasons why there is bad faith. First of all, it is our position that within the confines of ethical consideration 714, government lawyers must advise their clients and make their arguments concerning the public records law by applying this court's authoritative and definitive and repeated interpretation of that law, which is quite simply, the public records law is liberally construed in favor of disclosure. All doubts are resolved in favor of disclosure.
Counsel, is this a case of first impression?
No, I don't believe it is.
I mean, the underlying case.
The question of how of the attorney-client privilege, I believe, or the authority of the Attorney General under 109.02 has been addressed by six separate opinions, including State ex rel. Walton versus Crabb, I believe, in 1934, which definitively, in my view, addresses this point. In addition, I believe the court has clearly set the parameters for resolution of the issue, which is if there's a doubt, you turn it over. In this case, 109.02 clearly creates a doubt, therefore disclosure is required, and that's established law.
But the underlying case that you brought, wasn't that something new, creative, what have you, on your part, and not something for which there was a long line of case law? In other words, the question for me, on the award of attorney fees, and I'm a little different than some of the other members of this court, has been if the openness records issue is one that, that really hasn't come up before, so that the governmental agencies or the body resisting that might have reason to feel that they have just as good an argument as the person seeking the records going the other way, that we ought not to award attorney fees. But then after there's been a lead case that pretty squarely deals with that, after that, yeah.
Your Honor, my
that's where I am personally, and so that's what I'm trying to get to. Were you plowing new ground or not?
My response is that every case involves new facts, but the law is well established. The law is, as this court in every case has ruled, liberally construed in favor of disclosure. All doubt is resolved in favor of disclosure. That's the law.
Let me ask Justice Piper's question a little differently. Has this court ever spoken on the issue of whether an attorney who works for a department of state, the executive department of the government, whether that person who is an attorney giving advice to a department employee, whether that advice has the traditional privilege of non-disclosure?
The court has not applied the public records statute.
In fact, Judge Bryant in the court below dissented and wrote a dissent which essentially stated that. Isn't that correct? I mean, this is not a case in which reasonable people can look at the issue and say, well, it's clear, it's just black and white law that these records are to be given over, is it?
In my view, it is. If you
why is that? I mean, we have a 2-to-1 decision in the Court of Appeals, we have a trial court decision that says something different. How Justice Piper's standard for determining attorney fees happens to be majority view of the court now, and so I need to know that too. I need to know why this is a case in which we should award attorney fees, saying that it is clear, it's so clear what should have been done here, that the action was arbitrary, or whatever language you want to use.
The question becomes whether or not, and I believe the Judge Bryant was in error, whether you apply, when this court has issued a definitive interpretation, and if an argument is made within the confines of that interpretation, that's a good faith argument. In this case, there has been no argument advanced within the confines of this court's definitive and repeated rulings that all doubt is resolved in favor of disclosure. That's the test. In fact, the arguments below say that we shouldn't apply the test. They don't give any reason. Judge Bryant never gave any reason. And as I argued in our brief, we believe Judge Bryant was misled by the Attorney General's failure to disclose her statements in another case. Indeed, Judge Bryant said, well, there's no difference between an in-house counsel and the Attorney General. We believe that if Judge Bryant had known about the Attorney General's position in a brief she filed in another state within 2 weeks of the brief she filed in this case, Judge Bryant would have come to another conclusion. So I think that with regard to Judge Bryant, that gets into our second point, which is we don't feel that there was full disclosure under Ethical Consideration 714. Again, that ethical state. Yes.
Really, to be fair here, you really need to address another ethical consideration and some very pretty darn well established law on the issue of attorney client privilege. You're not even acknowledging that that's in here.
The issue of attorney client privilege.
And that there is law.
There is law in Ohio on the attorney-client privilege, not, again, on the issue of as applied to government. And as I cited in our brief, numerous authorities which indicate that the question of attorney-client privilege within the context of government is hotly debated. It is not an open and shut matter by any stretch. And there has not been anything, the Attorney General has never addressed that point, that the In Ethical Consideration 714 makes clear, government lawyer does not have an obligation just to the government. government bureaucrat. It's a broader obligation to seek justice. Ethical consideration made, 714 makes it clear government lawyers do not just advance the narrow concerns of a bureaucrat. They are to seek justice in a civil or administrative proceeding, which is what this is. I submit to you, when the Attorney General does not argue within the confines of this court's repeated holdings, but suggests with no reason given whatsoever that a whole new approach should be used, and that's what happened in this case. A whole new approach, we just ignore the liberal construction rule and start over. That's not good faith.
I know that we're not arguing the underlying case, except we keep getting into it for the purpose of trying to determine the issues before us. Now, I just have one very brief question of you that I'd like to have a direct answer to. You have recited a number of the facts of the underlying case in your brief. It's not too strong for me to tell you my feeling that I think that those facts are outrageous if they're completely accurate as you portray them. If we had had the benefit of a brief from the other side, would there have been any contradiction to those?
No.
So your professional assurance is they are as they are in your brief. They called in the Highway Patrol twice.
Yes.
And found nothing. They went to the Franklin County Prosecutor and found nothing.
Correct.
Found nothing. And then they did the internal stuff themselves. Then
correct.
Read it through. Okay, thank you.
In fact, Ms. French has, and the other side has filed affidavits which do not controvert those points.
I mean, there's no way under these kind of circumstances a person could ever defend themselves.
No. And that's part of the whole point. I see I'm very close to the conclusion of my 12 minutes, but the point I wish to make in response to all these comments is that while there are always going to be new facts, if this court holds that every time the facts are a little different, the government doesn't have an obligation to conduct itself within the rules established by this court. You've eviscerated the public record.
Counsel, is your position that the statute on award of attorney fees is mandatory? There's no discretion with the
my personal position would be yes, it's mandatory, but even if it's discretionary, when you look at it, the question of good or bad faith, as the federal ethical consideration suggests for federal lawyers, the government has to make its arguments within the confines of the definitive rulings. This court has definitively ruled all doubt is resolved in favor of disclosure. If the government hasn't contested that, because the government knows that if it made the argument within those confines, they would lose.
Okay, well, let me back you up to where I started at. Let's say I don't agree with your conclusion that there's a definitive guidance on this issue, or there was from this court out there. The trial court then, under my scenario, whether it's your case or some other, but let's say it is your case, is looking at some issues that it regards as first impression, determines in your favor, but on the question of attorney fees, decides because this was a tough question, and a question in the court's mind of first impression, not going to award attorney fees today. Is that an abuse of discretion?
I believe that one of the things that indicates it is, as I pointed out, was the failure of the Attorney General to notify the court below of the inconsistent brief which he had filed in another case almost simultaneously. Now, I recognize the Attorney General would have the freedom to argue why she may feel that this is a different situation, but it should have been disclosed.
She wasn't representing a client, was she? In Mississippi or wherever, was she?
No, actually, she's acting on her own.
Here she's representing a client. Could that be a difference? I mean, sometimes lawyers are put in the difficult, awkward position of arguing the law on behalf of this person, arguing the law on behalf of this person. Sometimes, you know, they're reasonable arguments, but they're different and they conflict. Is that you raise this to almost an ethical issue in your briefs? I had a problem with seeing that. I mean, because lawyers often are in that, the Attorney General's often in that position.
They should disclose to the court the inconsistency. They can then argue why they have argued what they did. But the court below is entitled to know about the inconsistency.
That's only a valid argument if we accept your proposition that it is inconsistent. As I read what they were arguing in the other case, I don't see an inconsistency. And so you have to accept your proposition to make that claim.
That's true, and I believe there is an inconsistency concerning the scope of the authority of the Attorney General. In this case, they argue it's an audit function. In the other cases, they argue the substantive grant of authority to establish state legal policy.
Let's talk about inconsistency, and correct me if I'm wrong in my recollection. You gave the speech in favor of openness in government. I seem to recall that, I think while you were at the Attorney General's office, you resisted openness of files with respect to the Dayton or Montgomery County rule that would allow certain, the open file rule. You know the rule.
I didn't argue that. I wasn't here, and I disagreed with that argument, and I'm glad the Attorney General offered
it. Stand corrected. Thank you.
I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Muchnicki. Mr. Karras.
Hey, please, the court. My name is Simon Karras. I'm the Chief Counsel. With me at counsel table is Judy French, Deputy Director of the Ohio Voting Protection Agency. Your Honors, I would bring the issue somewhat differently, and that is this. Whether or not the state had a reasonable basis for asserting the defense that is commanded by the Code of Professional Responsibility to protect the confidence of the secrets of the client unless there is consent of that client. Now, the reason I'm framing that way is that I think that's what this is really about. This is a question of whether or not the attorney-client relationship existed between the in-house counsel and the agency client. Now, there's no question that...
The case didn't get here, counsel.
I'm sorry?
The case you're presenting right now isn't here. That's just to point out when we started. That case was dismissed.
Well, I think it goes, Your Honor, to the question of the reasonableness of the position.
Well,
I mean, the position was dictated by the Code of Professional Responsibility.
Why don't you start with your position on whether or not a court has a mandatory duty to an ordinee, and if it doesn't, then why don't you deal with the standard review? If it is not mandatory, the standard review.
Well, since the Fox case, this court has held that the award of fees in the mandamus case for public records is not mandatory. That has been the consistent view of the court since the Fox case. I recognize that there are several strong dissents on the court from that. However, during the intervening years, the legislature has not amended the statute despite several opportunities to do so. We think that's significant. I'd also point out that as the court has noted,
counsel, are you confident of that? Because I may have a different impression of where this court is, where it's headed on whether or not it's mandatory. I thought we were almost to the point in terms of a majority that if you lose, that you're looking at mandatory attorney fees.
Well, as I read the last decision from this court, the Cincinnati Post case, my understanding was that there still was a majority on the court for the Fox position. What I've been saying, Your Honor,
which is the better result?
Well, I think that the better result is that it not be mandatory for this reason. Let me give an example. The second case, which I think was a very good decision to bring order to the public records law in this space, the courts noted that prior to that time there had been a wide range of inconsistent and conflicting signals from the courts about the nature of the public record law. And if in that situation fees had been automatic, you would have essentially been imposing fees for the presentation of issues which the courts had not decided were correct. And so I think the court has hit it right on the head when it says attorney's fees are punitive. And you have to look at the good faith of the presentation that was made with respect to the issue, which is why I started with the fact that part of it comes from the attorney-client privilege. It puts the lawyers in this case in an ethical
What's the precise language of the statute with respect to attorney fees?
The precise language is that a person may bring a mandamus action that seeks the release of the public record and that awards attorney's fees. Now, the legislative history of that, and I can speak to that because I filed an amicus brief for the Attorney General's Office arguing for the availability of mandamus before there was the legislative change, was that was intended to reverse this court's decision in Fostoria, holding that mandamus did not exist and that it would supply the mandamus action. But the mandamus action that previously had existed always had attorney's fees as being something discretionary. The reason I think that that's the better policy is this court has not had a difficulty in deciding which cases there has been an outright use of the public records law and which ones have not. On the other hand, if you impose a mandatory duty, then I think that what it does is it imposes a punitive award for even those decisions which are brought in best circumstances with the law being the most unclear. Let me go to the point that you asked, Your Honor, about the prior precedent in this area. There is one precedent. It wasn't cited by the Court of Appeals, and that is the Devine versus Schwartzwald case. And that comes about as close, in my view, to deciding this case the opposite way. In Devine versus Schwartzwald, the court held that an agency in-house legal advisor was engaged in an active practice of law. Now, how can you be engaged in an active practice of law in advising the agency and not have the attorney-client relationship that goes with being engaged in the active practice of law? True, it did not deal with the attorney-client privilege issue, but that was the square holding of the court, per curiam opinion of this court, that in-house agency advisor was engaged in the active practice of law. The court went through all of their duties, including the legal advice. They found that to be the active practice of law. They even went farther than what we have in this case, which is that they included in the computation of time for when the person would be considered to have engaged in the active practice of law, a time period when he was the chief of the permit division of the Liquor Control Department, and yet was giving advice pursuant to that statutory classification, and they included that. They said we have to look at the actual duties. And I think in this case, what you have official position descriptions that are enacted by law, funded by the legislature, specifically for the purpose of giving legal advice. The clients rely upon that. The lawyers for the client have an ethical obligation to defend that position. All of that, I think, goes to the reasonableness here. There's not one other case, except Devine versus Schwartzwald, that deals with the issue of an agency in-house legal advisor. That's the only case that wasn't cited by the Court of Appeals, and it goes direct to practice, engaging in active practice of law, despite one of the two. What the court, I think, recognized in Devine is that 109.2 may go to the issue of legal relationship, legal employment, but it doesn't go to the question of who's practicing law, who has the attorney-client relationship, and so forth. And that's what was recognized in this case by the dissenting judge below. It's what's been recognized here by the Ohio State Bar Association, who filed an amicus brief in this case. I think it was even recognized by the court below in the fact that it did not award.
Mr. Karras, on that point, if I or we get sued in our official capacity here, can we go hire a private lawyer and make confidential comments to that lawyer and ask the state to pay for it, or do we have to go through the AG's office?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, Your Honor.
Because I'm going a different direction.
Let me rephrase it in one sense. That is, we are the only counsel for the court in litigation.
Fine.
But the court has a counsel to the court. The court has an office of legal legislative services.
So if we're in litigation, you're our counsel.
Correct.
And you can hire somebody for us if you're in that, okay. Would that be true of the General Assembly too?
We are the only counsel for the General Assembly.
And that would be true of the Legislative Service Commission?
I would think that'd be true, yes.
Yesterday, the Legislative Service Commission, by three of its members, appeared by amicus brief in this court in the case.
I'm not aware of the circumstances.
But you see, isn't that the problem? Isn't that the problem if you let every individual section of every group say, oh, they have an individual lawyer or a peer, without the Attorney General, then there's no consistent policy.
Understand where I...
Because your argument is that there has to be a consistent litigation policy. That's why we are the umbrella organization.
Understand where I agree and where I disagree with that, Your Honor.
Sure.
Because I think it also answers the question of this ethical allegation that's been made. I mean, we have never said that we are not the only lawyer for the state in litigation. That's the position that we took in the amicus brief. But it doesn't follow from that, and I think the example of the counsel to the court, office legal services for the court illustrates, that it doesn't mean that because we're the only counsel in litigation, that there's some divine principle here that you cannot have in-house legal counsel advising an agency on a day-to-day basis, or even that the attorney-client privilege doesn't relate to those.
Is there anything that would be run by any one of those individual counsel that would not be privileged? See, the problem is that you, every individual thing, including parking tickets, whatever it might be, and we have this in the hospital association, that's the one I'm equating it to, because they decided they'd run everything through the Quality Assurance Control Committee, and under the statute, everything becomes exempt. Now, does that mean that everything in an individual department that you want to make sure never goes any other place, you just have a person walk into the agency head who's a lawyer and say, oh, guess what? And then it's all privileged.
We have never taken the position, Your Honor, that every communication between the in-house counsel and the agency is attorney-client privilege, any more so than I would say that every communication between a private attorney and their client. Has to be in the nature of the relationship. But the point that I want to make here is that one of the duties, and one of the many duties that the in-house counsel has, is to provide legal advice. And that is in the attorney-client relationship. That goes to the very core of the ethical protection that this court requires that lawyers defend.
Let me take you back to the issue that's here, attorney fees. At what point would it be appropriate to award attorney fees? When you've had this case, you've lost. Next person comes along and asks for this kind of information, you're going to provide it? You're going to fight them in court? And if you do, lose, or attorney fees appropriate at that point?
Well, it may be a different situation there, Your Honor, but I would say, and one thing that I need to say, is that while we lost our appeal in this particular case, we are not apologetic about the issue that we presented.
I'm not asking
you. We have not had a decision from that.
But help us out with where attorney fees begin to become appropriate. If another case comes along, and I say a majority of this court buys into the notion that this is a matter of first impression and that we ought to allow discretion rather than find mandatory the attorney fees. Now,
I would answer the question this way, Your Honor, that I would not do it on the basis of a 2-1 decision from the Franklin County Court of Appeals and the Ohio State Bar Association.
The rest of these cases are going to arise in Columbus. The Franklin County Court of Appeals has spoken. They are the law in this appellate district.
What I'm saying,
now,
Your Honor, is that
the next case comes along in Columbus, Ohio, involving state government. You fight it. You lose it.
is our attorney fees still inappropriate at that point?
We want a definitive ruling from this court. We think that we will prevail on the merits of this. That I would urge the court in its decision, in judgment, the reasonableness of this. That I think the court can and should address the underlying issue here, because I think it's unfair to leave the situation.
So you want an advisory opinion?
I don't think it's advisory. I think that what you're doing in that scenario is that you are addressing the reasonableness of the argument that was made, and that includes the merits of the argument. And on that, I think we win. There are at least four good arguments, two of them related to the Divine versus Schwarzwalder, but the other issue, which is, I think the court had below touched on in the dissenting opinion, is that the attorney-client relationship arises from the expectation of the parties.
You're standing there urging us to backdoor the merits of this case in that fashion?
I'm saying that you can find that our position was reasonable.
Well, we could do a lot of things, but do you think that's really good policy for this?
Without briefing.
Well, I think we have included the briefing.
Well, I have to say that the cross-appellant's brief here, I thought rather surprisingly gave us an awful lot of the merits of the case, but maybe had to because the issue is whether there was abuse of discretion awarding attorney fees, but I'm not suggesting we should launch out and decide the merit issue, but we certainly have a lot of the merit issue brief, it seems to me.
I would close around with this, and that's where I started, that as long as the situation is unresolved, there's an ethical dilemma for the agency counsel. And that is something that is not going to go away, and it's an issue that we think needs resolution. We think that it ought to be decided at the state stage or based on the precedent of the courts, based on the reasoning that's been presented. And I think that all goes to the reasonableness of the position that's taken. So contrary to the allegations of this being ethical issues this and ethical issues that, we presented, I think, good, strong legal arguments.
You've used your time, Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you.
Mr. Mushnicki, you've saved a little bit of time. Take 30 seconds.
This court's most recent decision on attorney fees is not the one Mr. Tarras suggested. It came down 2 weeks ago in the Finley publishing case. I suggest to you there's no difference between that and this case. In Finley, you had never issued a previous decision about coroner's reports and whether they were exempt, yet attorney's fees were awarded there because you did exactly what Mr. Orlander suggested here. You applied your traditional test of, is there any doubt? If there is, it's disclosable. And you awarded attorney's fees in the Finley case. Now, that's exactly what you have here. Yes, you didn't have a prior decision that addressed the narrow factual issue, but you applied the
Did we say in the Finley case we did it because we thought the statutory language was mandatory, or did we do it because we thought in the sound discretion of the court looking at
it? It just says you're entitled to attorney's fees.
So.
And what I'm suggesting that in this case, there's no difference between the two. You have the Attorney General did not make its arguments within the confines of the rule that this court has established. The fact that the specific factual issue hadn't been addressed was not a basis for denying attorney fees in that case. And it shouldn't be a basis for denying attorney fees in this case. In fact, the court on the last page of that decision noted that there was some question. There was some doubt about this whole issue of whether or not there was a privacy exemption for this. So there was a legitimate argument there, but the court awarded attorney fees. That's the same thing here, because the court applied its traditional test. If there's a doubt, turn it over. You didn't do it.
Mr. Mushnicki, not to argue with you, but most of the cases we've had involving 149 don't involve another very strong legal principle that we have to somehow work with, and that, of course, here is the lawyer-client privilege. Most of those cases are just applying the statute to facts where we determine, well, these look like public records or they don't. This case is different, it seems to me, in that we have the underlying issue presents us with two very strong legal policies. One is open records, and the other is when a client gives advice to his or her, when a lawyer gives advice to his or her client, that's privilege. And we've got those, they're butting heads. And that's a That's a very different issue than we have in most open records cases, it seems to me.
In Finley, you have quite a substantive discussion about the arguments advanced by the coroners in that case. Yet, you apply the test, when in doubt, you turn it over. That's what this court should do here. And otherwise, you're going to have constant government refusals and trying to come up with a new way to argue an old issue.
Perhaps we should determine that the prevailing party be given attorney fees, rather than talk on the one hand of mandatory and issues of first impression. Perhaps that would be the fairest.
I simply submit that the government can make the arguments it wants, but when it makes the arguments outside the confines of your traditional test, it takes the risk of attorney's fees. That's, and if that rule is applied, attorney fees are appropriate here, because the government at no time has ever addressed the issue in this case within the confines of your established interpretation of 149.43.
Thank you, Mr. Machinke. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of your opinion.